All right, welcome back to the Young Turks. Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparyan with you guys. We have an amazing number of stories for you guys, hence I didn't get to your tweets. So we'll do that later in the program. Anna, let's do it.
All right. Let's move on to more accusations of sexual assault and sexual misconduct in Hollywood. More men have been implicated based on these allegations, and one of the more recent filmmakers is Brett Ratner. So let's get to that story. The Los Angeles Times has published a piece indicating that six women have spoken to the reporters, Amy Kaufman and Daniel Miller, implicating Brett Ratner in sexual harassment or misconduct cases. Now, these are women who had been silent about what they had gone through previously and decided to come forward following this domino effect that the allegations against Harvey Weinstein have had. Now, there are a number of women. I'm going to do my best to detail all of them. But first, I want to start with Olivia Munn, because Olivia Munn had written something about Ratner in her book back in 2010, although she didn't name him. And the allegations that she's now detailing are horrendous. So here is what she had to say about it. Okay, I don't have the right graphics. All right, so she had alleged that back when she had first moved to Los Angeles to pursue acting, she was working on set for a movie that Ratner was in charge of. He was the filmmaker for that movie.
I've got the exact quotes here from the Los Angeles Times, which did a great job of reporting on this story. Olivia Munn said that while visiting the set of the 2004 Ratner directed After the Sunset, when she was still an aspiring actress, he masturbated in front of her in his trailer when she went to deliver a meal. Munn wrote about the incident in her 2010 collection of essays without naming Ratner on a television show a year later. Ratner identified himself as the director and claimed that he had, quote, banged her. And now let me go to Ratner's quotes about that, which were all lies, and we'll explain that in a second. He said, I used to date Olivia Munn. I'll be honest with everybody here, when she was Lisa, and that was a name that he claims she used. That was the problem. She wasn't Asian back then. And he went on to say, I banged her a few times, but I forgot her. Days later, he went on the Howard Stern show and admitted that he had, in fact, never slept with Munn.
He was quoted as saying on Howard Stern's show, I felt horrible. I said I banged her three times, which wasn't true. So back in 2010, we actually covered this story, and it was because Ratner had used a gay slur. And when he had used that gay slur and got criticism for it, Olivia Munn's book also came up. And all of the reporting about it made it seem as though they had some sort of consensual sexual relationship with one another, and that Olivia Munn went on to say disparaging things about him in the book. She made comments about his penis size, and we talked about that. And again, for those of you who might have missed that story because it was 7 years ago, we were under the impression, because it was reported over and over again, that they had a consensual sexual relationship. Entertainment Weekly specifically said that, and then later retracted it after Ratner made it clear that he lied about having sex with her. So they did apologize for it. Entertainment Weekly incorrectly stated in an earlier post that Munn says she dated the unnamed actor. We regret the error. Okay, so based on that false reporting, erroneous reporting, we commented on it, and I unfortunately called Olivia Munn classless, because I was under the assumption that she just said disparaging things about him after having consensual sex. They never had sex. He had harassed her. I did not know that. Not giving myself any excuses at all under any circumstances. And I feel horrible. Our commentary was based on bad reporting, and I should have known better.
Well, okay. So first of all, the most important thing here is that Olivia Munn was completely smeared, and it's horrible. So the way that it went down, as Anna explained, is first Brett Ratner lied about what happened. And she had actually the class to not name him in the book, even though he had done something terrible to her. And the more of the details of that story, now that it has fully come out, is that she was new to Hollywood They told her that he wasn't even going to be in the trailer. They're like, can you just deliver this meal to the trailer? She goes in, thinks it's empty. He comes out with a shrimp cocktail in his hand, naked, masturbating, and finishes there. And she's like, what in the world? And she screams and she runs out. Afterwards, he lies and says, oh yeah, I banged her, in the quotes there we read to you. Now, when we did the story 7 years ago, Ratner had not admitted that he had lied, and there was incorrect reporting that she had said that she did have sex with him, which is totally false.
That
it's
she
not
had
true.
Dated him, not just sex, that they were dating.
Yeah, and so based on that incorrect fact pattern, we said, wait, if you dated the guy and now you're calling out his size, etc., that's wrong.
Right.
Okay, but we had the wrong facts. So now that we see the full facts here, and like I said, LA Times, wonderful piece of reporting, not just from Olivia Munn, who has three different people corroborating her story from at the time, not now, and five other women also with corroborated witnesses at the time, not now. Okay, now we see that in fact it was Brett Ratner who was lying all throughout and had done all these terrible things, and Olivia Munn was the one who was the victim undoubtedly, and had to suffer through this, and then have to deal with Ratner saying all these terrible things for all these years.
Yeah, and look, I know that the MO for these types of people, these types of predatory individuals, is to smear the person that they victimized. And look, even though it was false reporting, I feel terrible that I fell for it. And I just want to be clear about that, because I feel like I should have been more skeptical, first of all, of Entertainment Weekly, and I should have done a better job in covering that story. So I just want to be clear about that. Now let's move on to other women and the accusations that they have made against Brett Ratner. One of them is a model named Natasha Heinstrich, and she said that when she was 19 years old and Ratner was in his 20s, he prevented her from leaving his apartment after watching a movie. And her accusations are so disturbing. He strong-armed me in a real way. He physically forced himself on me. At some point, I gave in and did his thing. She claims that he had forced her to perform oral sex on him.
So look, I want to talk a little bit more about the courage of these women, because unfortunately, still in today's society, there's great shame and oftentimes embarrassment, and even if it's a situation you can't control. And it takes so much courage to come out and say, this happened, and I was an unwilling participant in this. And for Henstridge to come out and say, yeah, it happened, and I'm not going to take it anymore. For Olivia Munn to say, look, in the beginning, she was actually trying to hide his identity, and she was doing the right thing. And now saying, look, enough is enough, man. There was another incident years later. Olivia Munn runs into a Ratner at a party, and he's like, oh, why do you hate me? Gee, I wonder why, Brett, I can't quite tell, right? And she says, well, I'd say dislike, being again
super nice.
Super nice.
Considering the situation.
Right. And he says, well, I mean, I'm so nice to you, I bought 10 magazines with your picture on it and masturbated to it. Okay, and talked about ejaculating on the covers of the magazines, etc. By the way, corroborating witnesses at the time at the party that hears him saying that. So for her, and so Olivia Munn, very rightfully so, coming out and saying, no, I'm not going to take it anymore, and we all shouldn't take it anymore. I love the strength and courage of these women. And so there's many others here, and it's about time that everybody fought back. And I agree with Anna. I feel terrible that in the beginning the story was incorrectly reported, and then and we took the wrong facts and
commented and reacted to it.
Yeah.
And look, the worst part is I know from personal experience what it's like to be lied about in the media and then have people pile on based on something that's not true at all in any way, shape, or form. And to know that I played a role that's similar to that in any way makes me feel horrible. I would never make excuses for any type of sexual predator. I feel terrible if she ever saw that video or you know, thinks that we have that type of mindset, because we don't, okay? Anyway. This is a very humbling experience for me personally. And It makes you realize you got to do better. All right, let's move on to other women who have made accusations. Another actress by the name of Newman says that she encountered Ratner in 2005. Jamie Ray Newman, to be specific, encountered him in 2005 when they were both in first class on an Air Canada flight. The filmmaker swapped seats with his assistant before departure so he could be next to her. Within 5 minutes of the plane taking off, she said Ratner began loudly describing sex acts he wanted to perform on her in explicit detail. So he was so loud that other people on the plane allegedly heard what he was saying, and she was incredibly uncomfortable. And obviously they're on a plane and she can't get away from him. And he took complete advantage of that opportunity. He was graphically describing giving me oral sex and how he was addicted to it.
Look, there are acts that are despicable and there are acts that are illegal. And so I don't understand guys who do this stuff. I guess that they think that they're used to wielding their power, especially on a plane. People can't get away from you. They have to sit next to you for God knows how long. And on this show, we had a co-host who told about how she was sexually assaulted on a plane. And women have to deal with being hit on all the time, nonstop. But then Ratner, on top of that, the things that he did to Henstridge and Olivia Munn, which were non-consensual sexual acts, it's just there's no end to this. He brags about how his best friends are the director Toback, who mm-hmm. just
who is also facing
allegations from 300 incidents, 300. And he also brags that one of his best friends is Roman Polanski. Who brags about that? So when you read the entire LA Times story, it gives you great context into what happened. And beyond just Ratner, it is unfortunately, it appears, endemic to not just Hollywood, but to society, that men in powerful positions, whether it was TV like Roger Ailes, Bill Cosby, and Brett Ratner and Harvey Weinstein, took advantage of those positions far, far too often. And not just in the 1970s, 80s, 90s, but all the way up until now. And I think that it's a wonderful phenomenon that women are coming out and saying no more.
Right. All right, let's move on to other news. Earlier this year, a nurse in Salt Lake City, Utah was wrongfully arrested for refusing to draw blood from an unconscious individual who had just been in a car accident. A police officer, a detective by the name of Jeff Payne, showed up with this patient and demanded that the nurse draw his blood. Well, protocol indicated, and by the way, the law indicated that they were unable to do that because the cop did not have a warrant, the man was not arrested, and since he was unconscious, he could not consent to having his blood drawn. So as a result, nurse Alex Wubbles was arrested and had to fight to get body cam footage to prove that that wrongful arrest occurred. I believe we have the video showing that wrongful arrest. Let's take a look at it now.
I have this. It says obtaining blood samples for police enforcement from patients suspected to be under the influence. Okay. This was something that you guys agreed to with this hospital. The three things that allow us to do that are if you have an electronic warrant, patient consent, or patient under arrest. And neither of those things, the patient can't consent. He told me repeatedly that he doesn't have a warrant and the patient is not under arrest. So I'm just trying to do what I'm supposed to do. That's all.
So she had her supervisor on speakerphone to prove that she wasn't trying to be difficult. She wasn't just trying to avoid complying with the officer. She was just following the rules. And then following that, he very forcefully arrested her, even though she did nothing wrong. Now, the update to this story is that the Utah nurse, Wubbles, has settled the case for $500,000. However, not all of that money will go to her. Let's go to graphic 22. The settlement covers all possible defendants in a lawsuit, including individual police officers, university police, and hospital security guards. The payout will be divided among the city and the University of Utah. By the way, just to show you what an incredible person Nurse Wubbles is, she says that she plans to use part of the money to fund legal help for others trying to get similar body camera video. And she will also donate money to an effort to prevent harassment and abuse toward nurses. So she's, you know, she's amazing and a very strong individual who is fighting for something that's incredibly important.
Yeah, no, I love what she did in giving that part of the settlement for others that are could benefit from the body camera video and actually get justice. And I love that we're also beginning to draw a line finally. I mean, this whole idea that cops are right no matter what is preposterous. Nobody's always right no matter what. What kind of an insane thing is that to think? And so and it's not just a matter of a few bad apples. It's that we've unfortunately given too much power to police in this country by never holding them accountable. So in this case, they were held accountable, and that's a great thing, and I hope it's on the road to recovery so that we can have a better justice system.
Well, not only were they held accountable, I mean, it's incredibly rare to see body camera footage that proves that there's either excessive force or a wrongful action taken by a cop. And then all of a sudden there is like a consequence or a punishment following that video, right? Walter Scott is an example of that. An individual who's literally running away from a cop and he gets shot in the back. He was not an imminent threat, but it didn't matter. The body cam footage didn't change the situation for his family at all. In this case though, the detective did get fired, which by the way, he's appealing. And the lieutenant who demanded or directed him to force the nurse to draw the blood was demoted and is now a regular police officer. He is also appealing that decision. I mean, the amount of entitlement that these individuals have is incredible to me.
Yeah, so great to see justice here. I wish there was justice in the Walter Scott case as well. By the way, the cop in that case also planted evidence on tape. We saw it, but he got away with it anyway. Because apparently shooting an unarmed black man in the back and then planting evidence is not that big a deal. It would be great if we could actually get justice for all Americans.
Right.
Okay, let's take a quick break here. We've got a lot more for you, including Donald Trump Jr. and his not so bright point on Halloween. How do you screw up Halloween? Only the Trump family could do it. We'll tell you about it when we come back. All right, back in the Young Turks. Guys, we got so many stories and so many tweets here. So let me just do a couple here. Shiroshi B writes in, so the narcissistic moron was flattered by the idea that someone powerful wants to help him get a powerful position. Shocker. That's referring actually not to Ratner, but to Trump wanting to meet with Putin. I am Sox says, someone needs to trick Trump to being under oath. Maybe some well done steak with ketchup as an enticement. Dana L. Briggs says about the House arrest for Manafort and Gates, thousands are in jail pre-trial for minor offenses because they can't make bail, and these guys get house arrest. Angry Mr. Bungle says, MAGA, and he's got a new acronym for MAGA, Manafort and Gates arrested. Ruth Iverson says about the last story we did, the nurse is a hero, she protected her patients, even at her own expense.
A woman of integrity.
Let me just read a couple of quotes here, tweets about the Olivia Munn story. Keld Visser says, thank you for taking ownership of that, Anna. Greg Zeppelin says, Anna, error wasn't your fault, bad info, you handled this like a champ. Dustin Sherlock, this is why I respect Anna so much, admits to a mistake, apologizes, and understands to do better, keeping it real on TYT. And Dr. Schadenfreude says, Anna, that was an amazing apology. I wish more journalists would own up to the mistakes like that. I love Olivia Munn. And by the way, I want to be super clear. I was more at fault at that video than Anna was. She's just you know, taking a lot of ownership on it. But if you go back and we're fixing that, we don't want to take the video down because I don't want it to seem like, oh, we're trying to cover up for it. And we're what we're doing is putting corrections as much as we can on that video. You'll see that I was way more wrong than Anna. Okay, let's go forward.
All right. Halloween happened. It just happened. And of course, you can always rely on the Trump family to ruin a good thing. And or at least attempt to ruin a good thing. And Donald Trump Jr. did so by exploiting his own daughter and posting her photo on Twitter to make a point about socialism that made no sense at all whatsoever. Case in point, adorable Chloe, very cute, holding a bucket of her Halloween candy. And the tweet says, I'm going to take half of Chloe's candy tonight and give it to some kid who sat at home. It's never too early to teach her about socialism. Okay. But that the candy was a handout.
And, you want to talk about socialism?
And that's all you guys have ever known. But that's all you guys have ever known. All you have ever known is handouts. Handouts from your family, you know, giving you all the wealth that you've inherited. That is a handout. Getting candy from individuals who are kind enough, nice enough to give a treat just so they don't get that trick. You know, that's a handout. That's a handout. She didn't work hard for that candy. She's a kid, first of all. Don't use your kid for these political points. It's so disgusting. But secondly, like, no, this is not a case of socialism. It was a handout.
Okay. So let's explain a couple more things to these knuckleheads. So first of all, your daddy inherited $200 million from his daddy. Wow, congratulations on all that hard work. Donald Trump's clearly not telling the truth about his wealth, but even if he was, estimates show that if all he had done was put that money that he inherited from his dad, actually a way lower estimate of what he inherited from his dad in the stock market, he'd have more money now. So, and remember, he bankrupted himself 6 times. In your Halloween analogy, your grandfather gave your dad a giant, enormous bucket of candy, and your dad dumped it out 6 different times in
That's
the streets,
right.
And we're like, oh, I don't know where the candy went. And then his dad gave him even more money.
Yeah.
And he would have had more candy if he'd done it right. Anyway, so, and then your dad gave you candy, this analogy, but you know, you were born on third base and thought you kicked a field goal. And he's like, oh, I'm so good. I don't like the socialists. I like capitalists who inherit money from their daddies and granddaddies. Wow, you must be so, so proud. And by the way, it's not about socialism or not socialism. It's about teaching your kids to do decent things.
Like, so, share. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I mean, I feel like every good parent wants to teach their kids how to share. But they're like, no, you keep that candy for yourself, Chloe. You worked really hard to earn it. By the way, J.K. Rowling had the perfect Twitter response to this. She said, fill her bucket with old candy left by her great grandfather, then explain that she has more because she's smarter than all the other kids. So good.
And look, you know, what's the decent thing? First of all, I hope he's, and again, I don't want to get into his kids, but what we do is we say, you say happy Halloween, you say trick or treat, by the way, that's the official right way to ask for candy on Halloween. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, you say thank you to every single person who gave you candy. And then after that, this public school that our kids are going to has a program where they donate to the needy. You know why you do that? It's not a matter of socialism, capitalism. It's a matter of being a halfway decent person.
Exactly.
And teaching your kids to be a halfway decent person. Hey, you know what? And we talk about it all the time. You got to be grateful. Look at all these wonderful things that you have. And some people don't have it. And wouldn't it be great to share that with them and bring them joy?
Exactly.
And we, you know, we've given some of their toys away to just friends, you know. And we talk about the joy that they had in their face when they got it and et cetera.
You sound like a terrible parent.
Socialism. No, it's being decent. And by the way, if you're actually talking about taxes and how it goes, well, in that analogy, the government takes that candy and then builds bridges and roads and schools so that other kids could have a chance at getting candy too.
It's just, all of this is always, these discussions and these debates are always so fascinating to me because it starts with this preconceived notion that every dollar, every penny that you pay in taxes just immediately gets redistributed to like a lazy bum or a group of lazy bums that refuse to do any work and want to mooch off the system. When in reality, you look at the federal budget, we've been over this a billion times, a fraction of that budget, a small fraction of that budget goes to these government programs, which by the way, repeatedly get cuts in funding to help the poor, right? We never have discussions about corporate welfare. We never have discussions about how we purposely, intentionally invade other countries and start wars to give private contractors giant contracts so they can go off and you know, make their weapons, do their drone strikes, do whatever it is that they want to do to profit handsomely off US taxpayers. That is the type of welfare I'd like to go after. And another thing, they pretend like they don't take advantage of any of the things that are built through taxpayer money, right? The roads, the bridges. They pretend as though they never use those things. They pretend as though they live in like this fantasy privatized world where all those infrastructure projects never benefited them once in their lives. I don't know if it's just ignorance or if it's just, you know, pretending like you don't know because you're trying to pass off this ridiculous talking point that makes no sense. I don't know.
No, it's definitely insatiable greed. And this clown has never bothered to figure out, hey, how would anybody get to Trump Tower if the government hadn't built a road or all the bridges and tunnels into Manhattan? So let's take away the bridges and tunnels and see how Trump Tower does. But he doesn't care because he grew up in a bubble where you're awesome for being rich. Rich people are great. And as Trump recently said, why would I want poor people in my cabinet? Because they're not good. Poor people are bad, rich people are great. It doesn't matter how you got the money.
It reminds me of this study that we talked about a couple years ago, and you guys should go back and watch it. If I remember it correctly, it was a group of people who were playing a game that was very obviously rigged. They knew it was rigged, okay? And so one group would constantly win in this game, knowing that it was rigged. It was slanted in their favor. And as they continued playing the game and as they continued winning more and more, they got this like weird sense of entitlement. They started like crunching on their snacks loudly and yelling, and they were super boastful. And they had this sense of entitlement as if they earned it, right? They're more talented or they're more skilled than the other player. But again, for the billionth time, they knew it was rigged and it didn't matter. Like they somehow, you know, convinced themselves that they were better.
No, look, it's human nature, guys. It's not just to blame it on Republicans or anything. So the game was Monopoly in that study, and they had more money to begin with, but they kept saying like, oh man, I'm really good at this. And look, I catch myself doing it, but at least we know enough to catch ourselves, right? So in fantasy football this week, I won. Even though I had the second lowest score in the league, I was super lucky. I just played the guy with the lowest score, but I caught myself going, man, I started the right quarterback, nice job. It was just luck, right? And nobody's luckier than Donald Trump Jr., but he doesn't know it.
Yeah.
And finally, I love Anna's point about the candy. Let's say that you had 100 pieces of candy and he took away 50. One or two of those candies would have gone to the poorer middle class. Here's 7 to Lockheed Martin, right? 4 to the oil companies for subsidies. 37 to the banks for a bailout,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
It's actually corporate socialism where they privatize the gains and socialize the losses onto the rest of us. That's the real problem.
I know how to play this game. I'm gonna have my kid not dress up in a Halloween costume, disperse like 5 to 10 other kids with Halloween costumes, send them out to go get some candy, bring it back to my kid and be like, promise you guys are gonna get your candy. Give it all to me and I'll give them like just the candy corn.
Real business, the worst.
Real business. That's Trump business like. You know, you get all these other folks to work for you. You do shit, get all the good stuff and then give them the garbage.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm the best at this. Great planner.
But to be fair, I did start the right quarterback.
Main point, candy corn sucks.
Yes.
You know, my daughter actually likes it. We went to an unreal Halloween last night, and I want to tell you guys about it in the post game. So tytnetwork.com/join, and I'll tell you all about that. It was bananas. I couldn't believe it.
Bananas.
All right, I'll tell you all about it later. All right, let's keep going.
All right. The CEO of Papa John's is trying to explain why it is that their third quarter earnings were not so great. In fact, in a conference call regarding the company's disappointing third quarter earnings, Papa John's CEO essentially said that the company is struggling because of the NFL's lingering anthem controversy. And he blamed the NFL's lingering anthem controversy on NFL leadership, namely Commissioner Roger Goodell, who didn't nip this in the bud. He should have just squashed it immediately and stopped the players from kneeling. And that's the whole reason why people aren't buying his pizzas.
Oh my God. So this guy's a Republican, pals around with Peyton Manning. You know how I feel about that. And this is the same party that believes in personal responsibility.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, no, it's not that my pizza sucks. It's not that the only reason that anybody buys my pizza is because of that toxic garlic butter that we all actually secretly enjoy.
It's so good though.
I know.
But I'm going to be honest with the audience. I like Papa John's pizza. I'm sorry. Okay. I don't like the CEO.
No. Our job is to be honest.
Yes.
And I don't like their pizza at all. It's super mediocre. But the butter. I don't know what's in the butter.
It's not butter.
Okay. But it is good. Okay. Anyway, so look. Look into making your pizza better, or maybe your business practices. No, never personal responsibility. It's those damn African American players who care about getting shot by cops wrongly. I mean, if only they stop getting shot. Well, they want to stop getting shot, right? Oh, why don't they just stop complaining about injustice and how people are getting killed in the wrong ways? You're costing me pizza sales.
Here's what I want to know. Is there anything that black people won't get blamed for?
I know, right?
Right? Like, Jesus. All of a sudden, they're the reason why Papa John's is not selling as many pizzas as it wants to or should. It's amazing. So let me give you the CEO's exact quotes during this conference call. He said, good or bad, leadership starts at the top, and this is an example of poor leadership. This should have been nipped in the bud a year and a half ago. The NFL controversy is polarizing the customer, polarizing the country.
Now that's it, I'm done with Papa John's. Yeah. I'm serious. So I know I did the Chick-fil-A ban because of their views on the LGBT community. We did it with a lot of people. I found out secretly that they're now going to eat there, but I've held strong. Okay, and I'm a man who cares about food. No, I'm done with Papa John's. You're gonna blame people complaining, people rightfully looking to change the justice system so that it is more just to all Americans for your lack of business sense? No, you schmuck, you're putting all your ads on TV, you're overpaying Peyton Manning, you're overpaying the TV networks, and not that many people are watching TV anymore.
But
you're too stupid to figure out digital, and so you're like, oh, I don't know, let's do what all Republicans do. Like Anna said, let's just blame black people. Yeah. Well, why do they care about justice so much when they should be forced to buy our pizzas?
There's one other factor that I think we're missing, and this is not a paid sponsorship, so I'm not doing this as an ad, but I just want to be clear. Domino's also stepped up its game, okay? Domino's is delicious and my favorite pizza chain in the country.
I think they've added the garlic sauce. But I think Papadakis' line is that he thinks because there's this boycott on the NFL because white people, because that's the only person, people who eat his damn pizzas, they're not watching the NFL because the boycotts, the kneeling is turning off all my white customers, and all my white customers aren't seeing my ads anymore during football games, and now they're not buying my pizzas because they're not reminded about my pizzas anymore. But then you got folks that also are boycotting the other way, and they're not watching because of how Colin Kaepernick got ousted. So is it all the customers who are in support of Kaepernick's protest and much of the rest of the NFL's protest that aren't buying your damn pizzas? No, he just thinks one-sided. It's just these folks, my like-minded people that aren't watching the NFL, that aren't buying my pizzas. So therefore, they should have nipped this in the bud and not allowed them to not watch my damn commercials anymore.
So whether you want to join my one-man boycott or not, I'll tell you this. Papa John's clearly cares much more about their pizza sales than they do about the injustice that African Americans live with on a daily basis.
Or freedom of speech.
And if that's your priorities, then go ahead and buy Papa John's. But if your priorities are justice for all Americans, and you see how indifferent this company is to that, and how they're blaming you for their own problems, it's not a company I'd want to give my money to.
Guarantee you, this loser, if he finds that he'll make more money if he goes with the Colin Kaepernick support, he'll have Kaepernick on the commercials, kick Peyton Manning out, and be on a knee like Papa John's. Come by me. Get on one knee, will get you half off.
Well, I hear you, but it would take a while because his proclivity is to be with Peyton. It would really pain him to go with Kaepernick, but he's like, how many extra dollars? Let me calculate that. All right, what's next, Anna?
All right. Congress has been questioning some of the top dogs at tech giants, including Facebook and Google, in regard to foreign money being used for political ads here in the United States. Now, this all has to do with Russian meddling in the election, namely some of the ads that were going viral on Facebook during and even after the election. And so there was a question as to whether or not tech giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter would stop accepting foreign money from foreign countries in regard to US election ads, right? So any type of ad that has to do with American politics. And it seems as though they're very hesitant to refuse that money, even though there are laws that should prevent them from doing so. So Facebook and Google declined under repeated congressional questioning Tuesday to commit to stop taking Russian rubles and other foreign currencies as payment for American political advertisements, despite federal election law prohibiting payments from foreign nationals. Now, Al Franken was the main senator who harped on this particular issue and this particular question. So I'm going to share a little bit of that dialogue with you. He asked the following: people are buying ads on your platform, meaning Facebook in this case, with rubles. They're political ads. You put billions of data points together all the time. That's what I hear these platforms do. They're the most sophisticated things invented by man ever. Google has all the knowledge that man has ever developed. You can't put together rubles with a political ad and go like, those two data points spell out something bad. And he was referring to Google in this case, not Facebook. But he did ask the same question to Facebook, and they were hesitant to say that they would stop taking foreign money. And so at that point, Colin Stretch says the following: it's a signal we should have been alert to, and in hindsight, it's one we missed. And he said, okay, yeah. Will Facebook commit to not accepting political ads paid for by foreign money in the future? And Colin Stretch said, Senator, our goal is to require all political advertisers, regardless of currency, to provide documentation and information that they're authorized to advertise. So some are interpreting that as, Facebook and other tech giants trying to avoid answering the question directly. But it is kind of interesting because they are able to do like facial recognition of photos. Like the things that you see on social media tech-wise are insanely impressive. Why is it so hard for them to raise a red flag when they see advertisements, political advertisements being paid for with foreign money?
So, as always, I'll state our conflict of interest here. Google and Facebook are among our two top partners at TYT. As is often, not always, I'm a little bit more lenient of Google and Facebook's position and take it with a grain of salt for the reasons I just stated, right? But I think I'm trying my best to be honest about evaluating this. Look, first of all, I think there's a lot of bitterness in the Democratic Party about the Russia stole the election. Look, I think there's some truth to some of that. They certainly tried to influence the elections, as we just saw with the arrest, and I think that's outrageous, and I'm glad that Mueller did all that. But that's not the only reason that Hillary Clinton lost the election, and
right. They
tried to make it seem like that, and they're partly trying to blame everyone under the sun. Facebook did it, Google did it, well, you shouldn't have taken ads. But look, it's easy to say in hindsight, but I remember during the election, nobody was talking about Russian or other ads going into Facebook or Google. So now in hindsight, we're blaming them and saying, okay, you should have known because it was in rubles. Wait, Facebook gets a lot of advertising in all sorts of different cash from all across the world. Now, they do have a responsibility to make sure that foreigners are not paying for political ads in America. That is a heavy responsibility, and they should take it seriously. And I hope that they do going forward. So, but just because it's in, I mean, foreign currency is a fair tip off, and that's certainly something that an algorithm should look at, right? But it's not necessarily 100% determinative, and I just don't think all of this is nearly as easy. And this is my bias from running a digital network. Everybody thinks like, oh, everybody's got everything figured out. It's not that easy. You've got a lot of engineers on it. And then once you find a problem, then you got to fix it, and it takes some time.
Right.
And so I think that they're becoming a bit of a scapegoat here. But I do want him to take every precaution, of course.
Moving forward. So yeah. I want to give you guys a little more context so you understand why this type of questioning took place. Now, there is real concern about foreign countries like Russia trying to influence US voters. And so as a result, members of Congress are considering legislation that would essentially regulate social media sites like Facebook or Twitter or search engines like Google. Now, they don't want that. Understandably so, these tech giants do not want that regulation, which is why they've agreed to testify to get these questions or answer these questions by members of Congress. But this isn't about punishing them for what already happened. This is about what is going to be done to prevent it in the future. So I think it's an interesting question as to whether or not Congress should get involved. But I also want to quickly comment on what you said, Cenk, about how Democrats are too obsessed with this component of the story. You know, just going back to the whole Manafort arrest and possible Russian collusion, I agree that that is an important thing to investigate. But I find it fascinating that when you hear from the Democratic establishment, they only focus on that because they want to use that as an excuse for why Hillary lost, right? But there's another component that I think is much more interesting, which is, did Donald Trump have shady financial deals with the Russian government?
Yes.
That is the most important part to me, right? Because if there is a gigantic conflict of interest there, then that means that he's essentially a puppet for Putin, okay? He will do anything and everything to appease him, so he gets out of whatever money he owes or whatever financial issues he's having with lenders in that country. So, but they never talk about that. I never hear them talk about it. It's all about collusion, collusion, collusion. Yes, it's important. I'm not saying don't focus on that at all, but I think it's telling that the Democratic establishment solely focuses on that component.
So that's a great, great point by Anna, but that I'd never heard before. Look, it's because if Trump had a financial deal with the Russians, even if it stretches back years, and him winning and then lifting sanctions is some sort of payback, almost exactly as Manafort and Gates did, and were arrested for on Monday on a separate deal. Well, that's a much bigger story and a way better way to get Donald Trump out of office. But that does nothing to vitiate their concerns about the election.
That's right.
That's why they're obsessed with Facebook and Google. You guys sold the ads you shouldn't have sold when we could have won if you just let us go back on TV and spend all our money on TV. And if you just let us keep doing the status quo, we would have won, we would have won. Yeah, okay, that's fine, I get it, you're bitter. But let's focus on the real issues. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that this is not a real issue. It is, and they should definitely look to correct it. But using it as a scapegoat is not helpful to anyone. And I think that if you actually cared about the country, they actually cared to resist Donald Trump, you'd focus on the deeper ties that he had with Russia.
Right, because that influences more than just the Democratic Party or any political party. It has an impact on every American because it means that we have a president who's not going to really look out for the best interests of this country, but the best interests of Vladimir Putin, because he might, by the way, this is my speculation, right? We need evidence, we need an investigation to that. But he might owe money there, significant amount, because he couldn't get loans here in the United States because he went bankrupt so many times.
Right, and it's not that there is no evidence on it, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence. What you need is direct evidence from an investigation.
Exactly.
So by all means, go forward.
Yep.
All right.
All right, I want to share a pretty devastating story of pollution with you guys. A Caribbean island is suffering a gigantic tide of plastic trash. And the images that we're seeing now of the coastline of Rotan are devastating, especially considering how expensive it would be to clean up this pollution. So let's take a look at some of these images. For the residents of Rotan, this is a tiny island. It's only 12 miles long by 3 miles wide. And the task at hand of cleaning this pollution is going to be insanely difficult and costly. And this is, people are saying that this is pollution coming from a river in Guatemala, and it shows you what the consequences are of just utilizing so many plastic containers, plastic products, without thinking about where they'll end up.
Yeah, I it's a tough one because we as humans create so much trash, and it is it's hard to put it away in a way that doesn't destroy the planet. And so there's certainly better ways than this. And but seeing the enormity of our waste and literally having it wash up on shore is just a stark visual for what we're doing to the planet on a macro scale.
But I don't think that that's really happening. I mean, like, let's have a debate about whether this is real, because I think that this is some sort of conspiracy theory. And
it's a hoax by the Chinese.
And look, if it is happening, like if there is evidence to prove that there's plastic waste, you know, on the shoreline, like, was it really caused by humans? Or was it just a natural thing that happens? It's just, you know,
during the dinosaur age, they had lots of plastic too. And it would just keep washing up on shore.
Plastic goes in, plastic goes out. You can't explain it.
Nobody can explain it. We have to be more mindful, because again, this is not, you know, we're obviously drawing the analogy to climate change. This obviously is not about climate change. This is just about trash. But we've got to be mindful of the planet. Otherwise, it will rebel as it is doing now. It's not a thoughtful process, it's just simply a matter of math and science. And the issue of climate change, if you make it too warm, it lifts up the moisture, creates more intense hurricanes and more intense droughts, more intense fires, exactly what we've seen. And if you build up a mountain of trash all over the world, sometimes it washes up on your shores. And of course, to further Anna's analogy, the Republicans won't believe it unless they see it with their own eyes.
Right.
Since it didn't happen to them and it didn't wash up on their shore, they're like, I don't see any problem with trash. There's no problem with trash.
Right. And by the way, I know that this is not a climate change story, but you know, the reason why I made that analogy is because it shows you how much careless human behavior can negatively impact our planet, whether it's through CO2 emissions or utilizing plastic products and disposing of them in a reckless manner. By the way, I want to give credit to the photographer who took those amazing images. Her name is Caroline Power, and she urges people to really rethink their behavior. Also, just to give you some incredible statistics, it's estimated that there are 51 trillion microplastic particles in our ocean.
Wow, Jesus, okay. Yeah. Okay, now I have one last story for you guys, this is fun. Can I get a background, blank background? Okay, so recently the Republicans wanted to name the tax cut bill. And so Paul Ryan thought, okay, well, you know, Donald Trump cares a lot about this. He doesn't care about a lot of other things, but the tax cuts for the rich he cares deeply about. So let's get it over to the White House to name the bill. And Trump decided that he was gonna personally name it. You wanna know what he decided to name it? I'm not kidding. The Cut Act.
Oh my God.
And then the House was like, wait, no. No, but we can't actually call a piece of legislation the Cut Act. That's what a child would name it. And then they go bring it back to Trump. You know how what he does. When anybody challenges him on his position, he doubles down. He's like, no, that's it. It's definitely gotta be the Cut Act. Otherwise, I'm not doing it. Like, oh, geez, for Christ's sake. Okay, no, but look, all of our donors depend on this. Please don't call it that. It sounds like a third grader named it. Okay.
Is there ever going to be a day during this administration where I don't feel embarrassed by who our leader is?
Probably not. So a senior Hill aide trying to like appease the White House, saying, look, at the end of the day, it's gonna be known as the Trump tax cuts. Don't worry, you will get credit for it. Okay, nope. I want it to be the Cut Act. Okay, now having said that though, I'm gonna shock the world by turning around and saying, he's not 100% wrong. Like his way, he is about the name. It's just too ridiculous, right? But the way of thinking and doing politics is really simple, and nonstop repetition does work in politics. And so that's why Trump's really simplistic way of thinking about things actually does resonate. If you said, come up with any kind of sophisticated words, which I obviously couldn't come up with right there. That was very Trumpy of me. The big, beautiful tax cuts, okay? They're gonna be tremendous. Anyway, people wouldn't care as much. And if you call it the Cut Act, they might be like, oh, what are we cutting? Oh, well, that sounds like we're really cutting. The problem for Trump, though, now to flip it on the third flip side, is that it's not polling well. And when he says cut, what Americans are hearing is tax cuts for the rich,
yeah,
which is true. That's why it's polling at a disastrous 25%.
Well, they've stopped lying about the fact that it's tax cuts for the rich. They're pretty transparent about it now, which is great. I'm glad that they are.
Yeah, so 25%, 35% disapprove, and 40% are like, I don't know, how many cuts are there in the act? They've yet to make up their mind. But the devil is literally, not literally, metaphorically in the details here. And wait till they hear the details, how it raises taxes on the middle class and the poor and cuts it on the rich. They'll hate it even more. All right, we got to go. We got to cut this show. Bye-bye.